that effect on me.
Cool. Here it is. It's Jessup Part 2 off of All of My Bodies by Holy Hum. Feel.
I don't think it felt really any different than how I thought it would.
So what was going through your brain when you put that one together?
I thought of falling into water, like in a bad nightmare type way,
sure.
And also taking off on a plane at the same time. Those are kind of two disparate experiences, but I thought that maybe I captured the sheer terror or the excitement at the same time in that song, but I don't know. I don't know if I did.
It's certainly overwhelming.
Sure.
That's what I'm taking away from it.
There's also that sort of uplifting through line.
Yeah, I mean,
mixed
that's...
mixed in with the terror.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, by definition what sublime means. And, you know, you're kind of like at once in awe, but you're also slightly kind of scared. So I was trying to, like, maybe see if I can express that nuanced emotion.
Aside from the obvious differences between writing songs with lyrics and, I guess, more traditional pop structure. What's the main challenges with writing an instrumental, say, versus a song with lyrics?
I would actually say that it's more difficult to write a song without lyrics because you are using kind of ephemeral concepts, I guess, like sound, which is, for the most part, is subjective, I suppose. But, yeah, I mean, when I'm writing an instrumental song, I kind of think of the sound as a character. And a character can kind of do various things with just even just a look of their eye or, you know, the way that they smoke a cigarette or whatever. So sounds can kind of be nuanced like that, too, and can kind of give off a certain mood. And particularly in this record, I probably focus more on the sounds than the lyrics, actually, to be honest.
That's always been one of the things that's kind of astounded me about, whether it be like Godspeed or even elements of Mogwai or... even explosions in the sky and stuff like that. How do you track down those tones and the sounds that you're looking for? Like, how much time do you spend in navigating your settings or navigating whether it's soundscapes to find what you want? Yeah,
a lot of time, yeah. And that's sort of the dorkier, geeky side of what I do. You know, you if you have, like, a keyboard with some sounds on it and some knobs on it, like, you can probably... It's endless, the possibilities of sounds you can kind of get from any instrument. And so, yeah, I spent a lot of time trying to get the sounds to speak without words.
Right.
How soon into the composition process do you know if a song is going to be instrumental or have words? Do you usually know at a similar spot?
Probably if you asked me like 5 or 10 years ago, I would probably always kind of assume that I would sing over a song. Whereas now more, I kind of let songs take me in whatever direction they're going to go. And for whatever reason, in this time of my life and my career, I'm more interested in sounds than words.
Was there a record, or was there just something that kind of clicked? Because when you're doing the IMR stuff, like those are very lyric-based records.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, while they weren't super pop music, it did have pop elements to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
At what point did you kind of start navigating away from that?
It was probably when I got kicked out of my... So I also do visual art, and so I got kicked out of my studio. And for a long time, my brains were kind of split in two halves, like the visual art side of my brain and then the music side. And that's sort of what In Medias Res was. It was like my musical output. And I also had a visual art practice. And I lost my studio space, so I wasn't able to exercise my visual art side of my brain. And so somehow those two worlds kind of collided, and I realized the potential of just sound as a means of expression. And that kind of satisfied both sides of my brain.
Nice.
That's really interesting that the sound became a practice of art, whereas before it was its own... its own separate thing that you didn't mix together.
Absolutely.
Whatever.
And I think as soon as I had that kind of moment where I realized that I can kind of satisfy both a conceptual art side of my brain and a music side of my brain, that I realized that sound is not any different than paint. You know, you can kind of like move it around, you can manipulate it, you can lean harder into paint, you can use a lot of paint, you can use a little bit of paint.
Mm-hmm.
It can be totally abstract, it can be totally formal and figurative. So when I realized that that sound it could be manipulated in that understanding and in that consciousness, I was pretty excited and satisfied with exploring that.
Do you still practice visual art?
Mm-hmm. But it's... When I went to art school, I was doing installation, and probably my more studio practice was photography, but now I just use sound.
No.
I make sound installations and sound art, and so I guess in a weird way, I still separate the two sides of my brain, because I will make compositions or sound-based works that are not, in my understanding, songs.
Yeah.
But then there's a greater crossover in terms of what the potential of sound could be, and then that kind of understanding seeps into my songwriting.
It's interesting that you go that direction with sound installation and as kind of like a different approach to visual art. I find that sound art, soundscapes, mm-hmm. music concrete, whatever you want to call it, is probably like one of the least appreciated forms of art.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think people throw on headphones to listen to a thing. In a lot of cases, they're expecting a song. And if it's not that, then people don't really know how to digest that. How do you, I guess, wrestle with that?
I think that art in any form just illuminates something that's already needs to be illuminated in the person experiencing it.
Right.
So I think that us in North America just haven't been taught that sound is abstract. It's an abstract concept. You know, like we're speaking at this microphone and people are listening to us speak in a different place. But that's not something that they appreciate, I would maybe say. And just like how you're listening to a CD of a band that, you know, recorded something maybe 20 years ago, like that's a really abstract concept to deal with, but people don't really think about it. And I think that's why probably people aren't able to take in sound in that way, because they've been taught to like hum along to a jingle, or you know, the only things that they notice are like the newest Katy Perry single or something like that.
Sound in general has been very commercialized. Not that vision and visual art hasn't been commercialized into advertising and stuff as well, but I don't know, maybe with sound it has a firmer grip on it.
To compare it to like the visual, I would say that visual intelligence is much more complicated. I think people are okay going to watch a movie with a bunch of blue animals running around on screen and they think that's totally fine. It's totally cool. Whereas with sound, you know, if people hear buzzing or something, they want to turn it off or they ignore it. Whereas people can appreciate more abstract visual concepts, but not sound.
Hmm. We're in an interesting direction here.
it's pretty heady right now.
Yeah.
For Sunday.
Yeah, right? Everyone just finished eating. They probably had a drink or two. So
I had a very lovely Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, yeah?
Just earlier. No, that was yesterday, actually. I went up to Whistler with the in-laws. And we cooked a turkey in the hotel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And that went over well?
It went over well. My partner wasn't even there. She's studying in New York.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah.
What's she looking to do?
She's doing counseling psychology.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to her.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations to me. If she kind of, pulls through and gets a job, I'll be set for life.
And we can expect more Holy Hum records.
Exactly. I'll have more time. I won't have to work as much.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Should we get to another track off the record? What do you think?
Sure, yeah.
Give you the set list there.
Yeah, why don't we do All of My Bodies?
Cool. This is All of My Bodies off of All of My Bodies. You're listening to the Vancouver Mixtape.
are back on the Vancouver Mixtape, produced at CGSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. We respectfully acknowledge that we broadcast from the unceded ancestral territory of the Coast Salish peoples, the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh. We stream online at cjsf.ca. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, at Van Mixtape on the Twitter. And Andrew, you have Twitter right? For your band? Is it just at Holy Hum?
Yeah, everything's at Holy Hum.
Nice. Unified social media presence.
Yeah, I didn't have to fight anyone else with the same band name. So I didn't have to do like Holy Hum underscore 69 or something.
Yeah.
Holy Hum underscore 182.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, that could be the cover project that the people do. Yeah. Now, you put this record out yourself.
Yes, I did.
Just talking. Can you talk about that process at all? I know if you're your own boss, then it's easier than if you have...
I would say I don't recommend it. Because, you wonder... Because an example would be I would have to pay, like, $180 to have them put the vinyl in the jacket. And I was like, oh, I can save $180. I could just do it myself. But that...
There's a lot of vinyls to put in jackets.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time, and it's definitely worth more than $160 or $180 that I saved.
Yeah, you have to remember to value your own labor as an hourly cost of how much time you're going to spend on this thing.
Exactly. You know, they probably had like however many people working in a sweatshop. They could have just stuffed it in like 5 minutes, but now I have, you know, the rest of the winter to do it.
Yeah. I worked for a while at Vancouver Film School with a guy named Chad, who used to work for Constellation Records, putting together all their records, putting the records into the sleeves, putting all the little smushed pennies that you got in the Godspeed record, all putting it together and shipping them out.
But Constellation saved $160 every time, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Big savings that adds up.
What are you going to do with the actual... proper release? Are you going to have a show? Are you going to get it out in the world and people will pay attention to it? Or
yeah, I'm not the most organized person, so I probably should have had a release show planned, but I don't.
You're doing radio promo.
Yep. It's easier. I don't have to like do my hair.
Which is like totally out of control right now for everyone at home, right? Sticking off at crazy angles.
Yeah. I thought I'd take advantage of it, of the opportunity of not being seen. But, yeah, I don't have any plans for a release. I might have an open studio, but that'd be exclusive to friends and family. Or, I don't know, maybe they could come by, but I just don't want people coming by and stealing all my gear.
That would be a really big downer on your album release show.
Sure. Yeah. So, I don't know. Nothing planned.
When you started this project as a primarily a solo project, you weren't looking to integrate a bunch of contributors, right?
Well, I kind of lost contributors, so there was no plan, really. No. But yeah, it just kind of by default ended up being just me.
When you were putting these songs together, were you imagining them as live performance pieces?
Absolutely not. And I can't even play them live.
No.
I can perform... interpretations of them, but I can't play them.
There's too many parts.
Yeah,
things that you can't do live.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even before the Holy Hum, I could barely play my songs live, anyways. So this has presented even greater challenges.
Did you have to like learn a whole bunch of different instruments?
Yeah, I mean, I had to learn the songs even because I was recording a lot of it as the tape was going.
Yeah.
So a lot of the songs they weren't preconceived. I just hit record and made some sounds. And I picked out parts that I liked. And I was like, oh, that part's cool. How do I play that? And so...
reverse engineer back to it.
Yeah, totally. And so I've been performing on some radio stations. And I have performed live. And it's a bit of a task to try to figure out how to translate the songs to a live performance. Because I didn't really think about it. I have very poor foresight.
Were you surprised of the amount of people that seem extremely excited for this project?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited and totally surprised all the time when I get any type of feedback. And so, I mean, I'm getting orders for the record every day, and I'm having a hard time keeping up, and the support boggles my mind. I mean, I don't really understand where it came from. No, I'm not trying to brag right now, but it might get worse, and it might, I might, yeah, have to, I don't know, I might not be able to keep up.
Well, I'll tell you where it came from. I just remember when we were starting university, and like we talked a little bit about your In Medias Res stuff off air, but like the most random people that I knew, even if they weren't into local Vancouver music, they were into In Medias Res.
Yeah.
And it was just like, if IMR was playing a show, then that was a show you had to be at. It felt kind of like, as especially as the years got on, it was a little bit of a legendary is not the word.
Mythic. It's,
yeah. It was a very like mythic project. So if IMR put out a record, if IMR was playing a show, it was extremely exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So when that stopped existing and the Holy Humps stuff started happening, I think there was a moment, actually there was definitely a moment, where I was like, oh, it's a guy from IMR.
Yeah.
And so like, I think a lot of people had those similar reactions and were kind of waiting to see what you do with it.
Yeah, I think that In Medias Res probably had, I always understood it as our fan base kind of being music fans that don't listen to music. Which is, you know, could be insulting, but also at the same time, I am a grown up now and I don't really, I've stopped trying to be hip or cool. So I think of that as a good quality to a band that can kind of supersede any sort of superficialness. And I'm hoping that Holy Hum is still kind of existing in that way. To be honest, like I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder when I stopped In Medias Res, and I sort of thought that Holy Hum would alienate the older In Medias Res fans, but I guess I didn't do a good enough job.
You made too likable of a record, unfortunately.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the lead up sort of between the creation of Holy Hum mm-hmm. as a project and the release of All of My Bodies. You put out a couple appendices mm-hmm. that the album art is certainly thematically consistent with yep. All of My Bodies. Are they related? Is there like
The idea is that the appendices were appendices for this record,
and
but I released them first because of probably similar reasons to what we're talking about earlier. Is that, you know, I wanted to give, or it was more of a experiment for me to see if sound could kind of sustain or carry a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, the appendices were, they should have been called like the foreword or something like that, because I kind of led into the album. Except that conceptually, I wrote the album first,
mm-hmm.
and the appendices followed. So I sat on the album and released newer material first. So
interesting.
I don't know, wrap your head around that. I don't know.
This is by far the most academic and like philosophical interview I think we've ever had in our show.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
It's great. No, it's good. It makes us feel smarter.
Okay, good.
Why did you decide to include that?
The appendices?
Yeah.
Because I started writing this, all of my bodies, just with sounds.
Yeah.
And I think by default, some sort of weird need to be literal, I wrote lyrics for this album. And for the appendices, I was still writing in the same headspace, but I didn't feel compelled to need to write words. And so I wanted to be bold and try putting something out there that was very, very different from In Medias Res.
Right.
It's interesting because that was everyone's introduction to Holy Hum mm-hmm. as a project. And so my mental idea of what I was expecting the rest of the output to be instrumental,
mm-hmm.
somewhat ambient or sound focused.
Yeah.
And so, you know, each time you put out a song that has words or has more of a traditional structure to it,
mm-hmm.
it's like a little surprise to me. And it's like, oh, cool.
Yeah. I think that the only thing that I would like to do consistently is to be inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
So that I kind of decided, actually, it was a deliberate choice when I started Holy Hum to kind of train my audience to not expect a certain thing, so that it would give me more freedom to do different things
mm-hmm.
and not piss anyone off.
Yeah, and listening to the record, you go from sort of ambient guitar-y stuff, and then at one point there's almost like Spanish flamenco guitar, and it all makes sense. It all sounds like the same record, the same band, but it's wildly eclectic. It's cool.
It's all sound, you know, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
Should we get to another song?
Sure. How much time do we have? Because there's a long song.
White Buzz?
Yeah. That...
This is the lead single.
Yep.
Let's do that, and then we can come back for as much time as we have after.
Cool. Does that work for you?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Anything you want to tell us about your ambitious lead single from your album?
It's comprised of three parts, kind of verses, and then it goes into a 3-minute guitar solo. And then the end, third act of the song is me attempting to sing opera.
Awesome. Well, you're listening to it on the Vancouver Mixtape.
You're listening.